The book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes. This year we've been talking about where life meets God. All of life meets God. Doesn't matter if you're having a good time or if you're having a bad time, life meets God. And so you can experience nature, you can experience your job, you can experience hardship, you can experience bad health, life meets God. It all meets God. So there's a concept today, and I was kind of thinking this way as a younger person in life, that a component of life is God. God is a component of life. In other words, we can compartmentalize our life into your job, then you go home, you've got stuff you do at the house, you eat, you have your family, and then part of what you do in your life is you go to church, you worship God, and that's just sort of a component of life. And so what we see is this, in the book of Ecclesiastes, that you have the author, which I believe is King Solomon, and he's saying, what I've done is I've taken all the other components and I've really experimented with them. And he had the luxury of being able to experiment because he had the wealth, he had the experience, he had the knowledge, and he says, I'm going to do everything to the nth degree. When you read about Solomon and the fact that he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, you would say, well, what's going on there? All right, so he, to the nth degree, experiences romance, to the nth degree. I mean, this is exponentially unfathomable, that a person would have that many people with which he has that sort of a relationship, and you're saying, what's that? Well, he gives the conclusion, as we read this morning in the adult class, Proverbs 18:22, whoso finds a wife finds a good thing. Notice, singular, a wife. A wife. Again, in the not 700 wives, not 300 concubines. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, when he says, live joyfully with the wife of your youth, he doesn't say live joyfully with the wives of your youth. He says with the wife of your youth. And so you can't say of Solomon, he didn't know. Solomon knew because not only did he know, Solomon had experienced. He had experience. So if someone were to say to Solomon, try this, he says, I already have. If he sees you trying it, he says, done that. And he has perspective. He has perspective. He had not only what we would call pragmatic perspective, but he had a spiritual perspective. Solomon's a prophet. Solomon is a prophet. He's a prophet. He writes this. This is scripture. He wrote the Proverbs. He wrote the Song of Solomon, if you want to know more about the romance theme. He wrote about that too. So the book of Ecclesiastes, what he is writing about, should life be an experiment of which we try to exhaust every component and find fulfillment in every component? Will it be found in the absence of God? Will it be found in the absence of God? When I was about 12 years old, I wanted a bike. I wanted a Swin bike. That was very popular back then. They still make them today. And so I had my eye on a bicycle. I got the bicycle. And then I found out that as I got older, two wheels were not enough. I wanted four wheels. And not just four wheels. I wanted four wheels with a sound system, okay? So in my day, in high school, you wanted a car that had a stereo. Back then, it was all about radio. And then there was the 8-track player. Remember that? You had the 8-track, and then you had this cassette player, and then you have the CD player. You've got all kinds of ways in which you can pipe music into your car today, but it still comes back down to the sound system. And what we find out is this: after we've experienced all of that, we still find our place in the grave just like everybody else, and who cares what kind of sound system you had in your car, right? And what Solomon, to some degree, is saying in Ecclesiastes, if we have life without God, we're no different than the gerbil that is in the activity wheel. And we see the gerbil running in the activity wheel, and you're saying, okay, what's with that? And someone says, that's your life without God. That's what it is. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the first three verses. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the first three verses. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor
in which he toils under the sun. Two things of which he qualifies, one of which is where are we? He's not talking about location so much. He's talking about perspective. The perspective is we take God out of the picture and we're viewing our existence, our purpose, and our goals from the perspective of just how things are here on earth, under the sun, life under the sun. That's the perspective. So he says, with that perspective, God is out of the picture. He says, it's all vanity. The word vanity means empty. It is empty, empty. So I don't believe that he's saying that it's always thought to be empty, but he believes the conclusion is going to be empty. So Solomon had explored concepts, and one of the concepts is, can I find something that really drives life and gets me there? And it's going to be one of those moments of where I say, this is just wonderful. I'm here. I have arrived. Am I going to be able to do that? So he is exploring that, and the exploration is for the advantage of everyone else. Now, several people have come, you know, into this life, and they've said, I don't need God. But some people have said, I need God, but at some point they're saying, I don't. In other words, I want to just move on without God in my life. I'm tired of this thing with God, and I want to move on without my life. Well, he's exploring that for everyone. And so I believe this. When somebody tells you that they are going to just go and explore life and try to find themselves, or they're trying to find where it's at, you could say, well, just all you have to do is read the book of Ecclesiastes. That's already been done. It's already been done. And so when he says two things, the perspective is life under the sun. That means outside of God, just from what we, from our human perspective, what we can see and explore, he says, secondly, from that perspective, everything's going to leave you empty if you exclude God from the picture. So we see in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 4, he says, one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun arises, also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually and continues again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things, he says, are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. He says that all of nature, he says, is a cycle. Someone says, well, that's not so profound. I get that. Yesterday I watched the weather, and what they said was we were going to have overnight light showers, but that was going to move out to the eastern plains, and so it's going to be clear. It's going to kind of be warmer. We're going to have some nice days today, tomorrow, but then Wednesday, guess what? Something's forming now out in the northwest. We're talking about Oregon and Washington State, and that is going to be working its way toward Colorado, but yet that will soon be able to pass by, and things will warm up again. In other words, we're saying this is just, you know, this is just a broken record here, folks. It's just the same thing, repeat, repeat, repeat. Who wants to watch the weather? But we do. And we're saying, well, what's on the horizon? Well, it's the same thing that's always been. He said, when it comes to the sun, it rises every day. It goes down. When it comes to the wind, it blows in, it blows out. Tomorrow, it'll blow in and blow out again. When it comes to the rivers, he said, it rains. The rivers fill. They go into the oceans. The oceans, they don't fill up and say all full. The oceans, they evaporate. And then condensation brings back water. And we have rivers full again. It just keeps going over and over and over. And someone says, that's not rocket science. He's saying that is not rocket science. What he's saying is this. That's not where true joy is found, in nature itself. And so we have this concept. It was existent in the time of Solomon. It was also existent in the time of the New Testament, Acts chapter 17, when the Apostle Paul was talking about the purpose of life, and he confronted two different thoughts at that time, the Epicureans and the Stoics. The Stoic concept of life was that you have all of nature, and the purpose of mankind is to become one with nature. Doesn't that just sound like the New Age movement to you? It's the same thing of which we have today. So it says we want to be one with nature. And I'll tell you why that could be scary is because if you die, nature doesn't even blink or care that you existed. Tomorrow the sun will continue to rise. I tell people that watch their favorite sports team that if they lose, please continue to feed the pets in the house, okay? Because life moves on. Don't punish your pets because your favorite sports team. I also say feed the kids too and feed your spouse. But the idea is nature does not blink, and that's what he's saying. He says everything just keeps running in a cycle. And here I come along as a man, and I think I'm going to catch the fish. And then I'm going to eat the food, and then I'm going to go out and fish some more. And I'm saying there's not enough fish, so I've got to do something to make more fish out there in that river. He says, you can do that, and you can make as much stir and animation as you want, but that's not going to equal to accomplishment. That's going to alter the whole process. We as a person or as a collectivity of people are not going to be able to alter the whole process and say, finally, we got the earth fixed to where it satisfies us. We're not going to be able to do that. So nature itself. Let's look at some things as we read on here in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, nature will not deliver it. We read a couple of more verses here in verse 9. He says, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be. And there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new. It has already been in the ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who come after. So someone says, we finally arrived. We're important. When I was in high school, I graduated in 1976, which was our nation's bicentennial year. In our city, they painted fire plugs, fire hydrants, whatever you want to call them. They painted them to look like American flags. And we're thinking, wow, we are the it generation. Bicentennial. I mean, besides that, I was born in 1957. There's not a better year in the manufacturing of automobiles in 1957, okay? It's just tremendous. Right, Rick? It's a good year, 1957. So we're talking about things that say, wow, this is really us. Let me tell you, I went back and I thought when I went and toured my high school on a little reunion trip a couple of years ago and went into the old high school building, I'm looking, where do they have the photo of the class of 1976? That was the only one that wasn't there. I started opening up closets and looking for it. Where, you know, that's the only one that wasn't there. And we think we make quite a stir with animation, but that does not equal to accomplishment. And we think that we are making our mark on this earth, and he's saying this earth will have no regard for the mark of which we make. He's already explored that. Nature itself is not going to be altered because of our existence, and nature itself is not going to bring us to the point of which we say, this is where it's at. And then he says, knowledge will not deliver. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 12, he says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grass before the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So again, academically, Solomon was doing what the Greeks did in the first century. And actually, before the first century. It all started with Alexander the Great, 300-something B.C. And of course, he conquered the world and established education centers all over the earth. And so universities cropped up and you had all the philosophy, all the education, all the sciences. People were smart in that day. Solomon says this. He says, I've looked into this thing called education, and I have researched it all. I think I have the answers. He says, but in all that, it did not bring me true joy. It did not bring me true joy. The more I learned, as a matter of fact, he says, it brought me sorrow. When you figure out how life is lived, when you have to battle against the thorns and the thistles of life, the sorrows and the griefs, and you say, I'll just learn more about it, it doesn't in some way bring true joy. What it brings is this, more misery. I know about those things. Solomon says, I know about those things. I know about life. I know about wisdom. I know about philosophy. And the answer, he says, is not found without God if we think we're going to simply become better educated. The answer is not found without God. Because in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. He's not saying that information is bad. What he's saying is this, if all you have is information, it'll beat you up. If that's all you have is information, it will beat you up. Then we see that labor. And so we're all about work, and sometimes we throw ourselves into our work. Work is very satisfying. And he says, but work and labor without God, from the perspective of life under the sun, is not where true joy is found. Chapter 2 and verse 1, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with myrrh. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of myrrh, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. He says, I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. He's talking about work, lots of work. And we'll save verse 7 for just a moment. Actually, let's go ahead and put verse 7 in there. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. Think about the labor of which he did, the first of which is he built the temple for the Lord. He built the Lord's house. So he knew about labor. He knew about production. He understood architecture. He understood what it took in order to get things accomplished, not only in the house, but out in the field. He says, we had produce. We had servants. We had those who were shepherds that were over the flocks. I knew how to get work done. Labor management is an art. He said, I had it down. I got it done. Sometimes you can have just two employees and it will really sink your ship. Just two employees. And you're saying, I got to be the boss? No, please don't make me the boss. And some people don't want to be the boss. Solomon says, I want to be the boss. I can do this. So from either the end of labor or management, he was successful, but yet he said, after everything was built, everything was done, looking back with that kind of satisfaction, say, we're not there yet. Everything's in place. I had a friend in high school. I was following him one time over to the automotive shop and pulled up behind him. I said, you know, you got a taillight out. He says, I know. He says, I always leave one thing broken on my car because if I fix everything, something else goes wrong. And I thought, what a philosophy, okay. And so my thought is this, you get everything perfect, you might die, you know. You don't get everything perfect. That's a dangerous place because then you get like, I've got all things perfect and, you know, don't need God. And that's what he's saying. He says, you get everything perfect, and then all of a sudden you realize that everything perfect doesn't make everything perfect. Solomon is saying, in the absence of God, life under the sun is vanity. That's what he's saying. Whether it be nature, whether it be knowledge, whether it be labor, or whether it be riches. He said that he had greater possessions in verse 7, greater possessions than all those who were before him. Nobody had more than he did. Verse 8, he says, I also gathered, this is chapter 2 and verse 8, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. And then I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So you might think that riches and entertainment are where it's at. That's sort of the goal in life. If we just get more stuff and we've got heaps of riches and wealth, and then we can have entertainment to our heart's delight. He says, I still woke up empty in the morning. I still woke up empty in the morning. Empty. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So he's exploring this, he's researching this, and he's saying, okay, you push God on the back burner. In fact, Solomon did. We know where Solomon took all these wives, and he constructed worship places for their idols, and he has pushed God out of his life, and he says, we'll just explore all this stuff, and it's going to be great. And then all of a sudden, after it's all said and done, you're saying, okay, what have I got now? What you've got now is a life that is fading into the sunset, and you are empty. No matter what you have right now, if you separate yourself from every possession that you have right now, all you have is your record as you stand before God. That's all you've got. And you're saying, wait a minute, I got to have this. When people get arrested, they get separated from their belongings, it changes their whole perspective. It's a dynamic of which they are stunned because they're separated by those things which they think empower their lives. When we're separated from our stuff, when we're separated from our body, and all we have left is we have a relationship that God calls home, all of a sudden we are stupefied. We are stunned. That's when we see in Scripture that the Apostle Paul says, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess. That is, at that point, you're saying, God, you are right. God, you are right. You are right. But somehow or another, in life, it's easy for us to look at these things. And one thing I didn't add to the list, if you want to add number 6, you can add romance. Okay? You can add that if you want to add number 6, because he talked about that. If you want to put all 6 of these down and say, even in total, if I can have all 6 at one time, and someone would say that that would be a successful life. Truly enjoying your environment, that you have a high degree of education, you're successful in labor, you're successful in riches, you're successful in having all the entertainment. In other words, you're not bored. You're not bored. And someone says, I just don't want to be bored. And there's all this stimulus. I want you to see in the list that we have that none of these things are wrong within themselves. Not any of these are wrong within themselves. In fact, all of these are a blessing. And if you want to read the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes on your own, he'll talk about the blessing that can be found in these things. That they are not wrong within themselves. Nature is a blessing. Knowledge is a blessing. Labor. True labor is great. You need to enjoy what you've worked for. It's always satisfying to have done something and say, I love this. This is great. It's fulfilling. And then you have some money so that you can purchase what you need and what your family needs. And then you can enjoy some entertainment. You've taken some rest. You've supplied yourself a recreation. All those are good within themselves. But if all you do is all those and you have the total of all those and God is absent from the picture, he says it will leave you empty. This is eventually what happens. You don't have to read all of chapter 12 right now, but just read verse 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1. What he says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. And then he describes the failing of the human body part by part. Your eyes, your teeth, your joints, everything, part by part, and you're saying, wait a minute, I don't step as high as I used to, can't see as far as I did, I just can't function like I used to, and I used to be able to enjoy nature and get more knowledge and labor and acquire riches and enjoy entertainment. Now I'm half deaf and toothless. And how am I going to hang on to this? And no matter what we do, it's not going to last. That's what he's saying. It's reality, and the reality is this, that every opportunity of nature needs to be experienced and enjoyed in a relationship with God, and the same would be true about knowledge, labor, riches, and entertainment. In other words, God is not a component with all these others. God is everything. And all these others can have meaningful purpose within that picture where God is everything. They can have meaningful purpose. But if any of these dominate, if life becomes about a pursuit of entertainment, the child that says, I just don't want to be bored. And so parents are trying to supply everything to keep that child from being bored in the absence of God. Then all of a sudden you've got someone who is more like a statue than an animated person that has a personality and some kind of interaction. And you're saying, what's wrong? Why won't you personally interact? It's because I'm bored with you. I have to have my entertainment. Or the person says, I just want more money. And they will stop at nothing or at the harm of anybody in order that they might acquire more riches. Someone says, I just want to be about my work. And so they work their fingers to the bone. They're out there turning the millstone. It's not the gerbil in the wheel. It's the person turning the millstone. Okay. He says, just keep me on the millstone. My life is good. And that's what he or she wants to invest themselves into is just work. They lose themselves into their work. And again, they don't have a spiritual relationship or a personality that connects with the real relationships of life, and that is with God and others. So it would be true about anything you want to put in that list, including relationships. Someone says, I'm just about my spouse or about my girlfriend, my boyfriend. My whole world revolves around that, and I've seen that play out in my short decades on this earth. And that is that then that person passes away and they said, my world is gone. Or that person walks out of their life. My world is gone. You're like, wait a minute. There's more to life than just that. There's more to life than just that. True joy is accomplished by relationship with God. That's where true joy is accomplished. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 9, he says, what profit has the worker from that which he labors? We'll read verses 10 and 11 also. He says, I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. So it starts with he. It starts with God. Everything of which God makes has purpose. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. The expression is he puts eternity in their hearts, and someone says, what's life all about? Alan Yater stood right here. In fact, he was standing right here, preaching a gospel meeting for us about 6 years ago, and he said that 250 philosophers of the world had a symposium. They got together. These are atheistic philosophers. All of them were asked to write down, what is the purpose of life? 250 out of 250 said, we don't know the purpose of life. And why is that? It's because they don't know God. God says, I know the purpose. I didn't put all that for you to understand, but I know this, that it's all good, it's all purposed, and it all will be beautiful within your life if I'm what you are about. It will be beautiful. It will be beautiful if I'm what you're about. He says, you have a yearning, an eternal yearning. So people do this, they just keep wanting to live. And you talk about people that get over illnesses or they live to be 110, those kinds of things you hear about. They said they just had a will to live. Why? Why would you have a will to live? Actually, you have an eternal yearning. You want to keep going forever. Forever. He says, I put that in you. I put that in you. And it's not by accident. And you're going to accomplish that, he says, if you have me. That's how you will accomplish this, if you have me. And so somebody says, well, I just worked like crazy trying to get all these other things, the list of five accomplished, and didn't have any eternal goal with God. And this thing is just bitter at the end. Comes to a screeching halt. It's bitter. He says, no, it was a blessing. God's saying it was a blessing. The only way in which we make that a blessing is that we focus on relationship with God. We focus on relationships that are within our ability and be a blessing to others as much as we possibly can, because we have a spiritual yearning that wants to go forever, and it's eternal. And that's Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and I put the wrong verse on there. It's verse 11, not verse 9. Number 2, we have a spiritual purpose. At the close of Ecclesiastes, and you probably already thought ahead if you've read the entire book, and we will look at this, verse 13, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. He says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. I like that. This is man's all. This is everything. Fear God and keep his commandments. We spoke about last week, as we talked about the Proverbs, fear God means that we have a relationship with God which is healthy, that trusts him and desires to be close. That's what fearing God means. It trusts God and desires to be close to him. He says, that's what life is about. He says, and keep his commandments. He's giving you the instructions. Live by what he says. Trust him, because he's the one that has the eternal perspective. You don't. He does. Verse 14, then, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. He says God's going to bring it all and hold it all up in judgment, and he's going to determine what your eternal verdict is going to be, and he is in control. He rules. It's all about God. It all goes back to God. It all goes back to God. And you're saying, going back to God, what am I going back with? Well, it could be somewhat like Belshazzar. That was the man who was ruling Babylon, and he saw handwriting on the wall, and they summoned Daniel to read it. And Daniel says, you know what that means? It means you've been weighed in the balances and you've been found lacking. That's where you're at. Somebody that exhausts themselves in those things, such as nature, their work, their entertainment, even romantic relationships, and then ends in vanity. That means they end up empty, just like Belshazzar. Then finally this, life is not just a Gentile existence. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says that a Gentile seeks after only that which is the here and now. In other words, we're putting out fires for what it takes for us to have existence and even comfort in this life. In Matthew 6 and verse 31, he says, therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For after all these things, the Gentiles seek. Who are the Gentiles? They're the people that live without God. And so what's the common denominator? You meet an atheist, and I've met a couple, and you say, where are they at in their perspective? Jesus just nailed it. He says, they just worry about what they're going to eat, what they're going to drink, and what they're going to wear, because they are the only ones they think are supplying it. There's a lot of apprehension there. Anxiety. Verse 32, for after all these things the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things, but seek first. Here's the perspective. This is how to keep life from being empty. This is how to arrive at joy, is because we have joy, because our God, our Creator, our God, our Sustainer of life, our God who holds eternity in his hand, he's in charge. Seek first the kingdom of God. That means his rule, his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. That's eternal joy. That is eternal joy. Life in perspective is because God is in control. And that's where we have eternal joy. Through preaching now.